suddenly it happens and the dream comes true. Wonderfully, beautifully it happens and your world is new.
Hey everyone, it's Jonathan, and welcome to what I guess is the start of a new semi-recurring series here on the podcast, talking about all different versions of Cinderella. This will eventually be an episode of every version ever, but I realized I have so many versions of Cinderella that I want to do, it just kind of makes more sense to just do one here and there every once in a while, rather than a ton all at once. Kind of like what I do for Wonderland Wednesday, but this probably won't be as frequent as Wonderland Wednesday. This episode is kind of long overdue. Mark and I recorded this episode on the film The Slipper and the Rose around the same time as I did the miniseries on Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella, so it's been a while. At that point, I was thinking I was just going to go full steam ahead with Cinderella for the rest of the year and not do any Christmas stuff at all, but my plans changed not long after we recorded this one. Actually, I think it kind of changed because of this one. We talked about a version of A Christmas Carol with one of the stars from this film, Michael Hordern, and I decided maybe I didn't want to skip doing versions of A Christmas Carol after all. So my Cinderella series screeched to a halt, and I quickly lined up a bunch of guests for December. But we're back in business now, and I'll be picking up right where I left off, talking with Mark Brown about the 1976 Sherman Brothers musical, The Slipper and the Rose. So I think you were the one who suggested this, because I don't think I had heard of this before. I think you said that this would be a good one to do.
Correct. I think when I brought it up to you, you said that you'd never heard of it.
I feel the title sounds familiar, but I think I might have been confusing it with, I think it's called The Sword and the Rose.
Yeah, there's a Disney film with Glynis Johns and James Robertson Justice.
And which I also haven't seen, so.
Yeah. They are very similar names. You just got to swap the sword for a slipper.
Where did the rose come in? Because I only had a chance to watch this once. I actually watched it last night. I ended up staying up until 3 a.m. because I thought this was a short movie, and it was like 11 o'clock, and I was like, oh, I've got time. It's only like hour and a half. And then like I was watching it, and then I realized that the one that I had downloaded cut off in the middle. So I saw an hour and 14 minutes, and that was only half the movie.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, this is a classic musical film, like a full 2 hours and 20 and a half. Yeah. I watched this on YouTube. Like, this is actually one of the free ones that are available under YouTube movies.
I found it there, but like if I decide to put in footage.
Oh, okay, of course, yeah.
So I downloaded it, and I apparently downloaded a bad copy that only had half the movie. And so I ended up having to stay up until 3 a.m. watching this. So some of the details might be a little... End, I think I was getting tired. So was there a rose that I missed? Because I don't remember a rose other than like some roses on a table or something.
No, I think that was the only rose. The rose on the table later on in the movie when Cinderella's in the castle, and you know, we'll get to that. But like, yeah, there. I also was thinking to myself after, because I've seen this movie before, but this is my second time watching it, and I was like, wait a minute, what is the rose? What does the rose play in this? I think it's just it was just a cool title. Like, I guess the rose represents the prince, but it is kind of weird.
Hey.
So don't worry, you didn't miss out on anything, any detail with that.
Well, I went and I tried to read through the Wikipedia page, and I could not find anything about a significant rose that I might have missed.
Oh yeah, there definitely was no significant rose in this at all.
So where did you first see this?
I think it was also YouTube. Okay. I can't remember how I heard about it. I'm a big Disney guy. We're big fans of the Sherman Brothers. So I had heard that the Sherman Brothers had done a Cinderella movie where not only did they, you know, do the songs as they usually do, but they were actually involved in the writing. I think it's the only film that they actually have a screenplay credit for that they've ever worked on. So I was like,
I wondered about that.
Yeah. So I was like, I got to check that out. And I guess I found it on YouTube. I can't remember what I saw. It was, I don't know, maybe probably over 5-6 years ago. And I liked it from what I remember, because especially most of the songs got stuck in my head, and they're songs that I sing to myself up to this day. I actually own the Sherman Brothers wrote it like a memory book slash autobiography called Waltz Time. I think it was like back in the 90s, but I own it, and they talk about like their history and the movies they worked on. And there's actually a chapter on The Slip and the Rose. And I told myself I was going to reread that chapter for our podcast, but I forgot. So just in case there was like any cool tidbits in there, but yeah, sorry, I forgot.
No, it's fine. So overall, what is your opinion of this movie?
Overall, I like it a lot. I really again, if you give me good Sherman Brothers songs, that's like a automatic like it boosts itself up to at least a B for me. So overall, I do like it. I like the story of Cinderella's, and as we'll talk about what they do in this film, they kind of make the prince more the main character than Cinderella is, which I think is interesting because I don't think I've seen that in any other version that I've seen, but I haven't seen that many anyway. But I do like it a lot.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen, well, so far, I haven't watched too many yet. And most of the ones I'm watching are Disney related. So I don't have any on the top of my head that it's more about the prince than Cinderella.
Correct. And I think that's probably one of the reasons they called it The Slipper and the Rose instead of Cinderella, because it would be very people would be disappointed with the title. It's like, hey, Cinderella's she got like what, maybe an hour total in this movie. It's like 2.5 hours. But yeah, I do like it a lot. I love songs, I love the acting, I love the direction overall, and the costumes and the cinematography. Like a lot of classic musicals, it can get a little long, and there's definitely scenes that I feel could have been cut. Like when we get to it, like the whole ending, the whole ending is just questionable, confusing to me.
Overall, I did like this. The music, I was like 50-50 on some songs I like, some songs I didn't. At first, the first few songs, I was like, okay, this is not Sherman Brothers' best work. But then we got to, I think it's called What a Comforting Thing to Know. And I was like,
Oh
okay, I
yeah.
love this.
Yeah, that is the funniest. We like to talk about funny death songs on this podcast. We had Thank You Very Much and Scrooge. Now we got Comforting Thing to Know. But yeah,
It
that is.
reminded me of, like, it's sort of the same, sort of different, but it reminded me of that one song from which movie is Monty Python, the one with Jesus, like Life of Brian, the end song.
Walk on the Bright Side of Life or something. But
Yes,
yeah.
it reminded me of that. It's
Yeah.
not, I don't think it's quite as dark as that, but I loved it. It was great.
Yeah, no, that's one of my favorite ones too. My favorite one is Protocolagorically Correct. I love that one a lot, that the king sings.
Yeah, I liked the wordplay in that. I don't think I felt like it went on too long, but I did like the wordplay. I was like, this is very Sherman Brothers.
Yeah, because once you hear the word protocolagorically, you're like, oh yeah, that's a Sherman Brothers made up word.
Pretty much.
I think when I was looking at the song on YouTube, and one of the comments I was reading, someone said, oh, the reason I came back to this song was because I use the word protocolagorically in like my everyday life, and I had to figure out how to spell it. And I'm trying to think, well, what sense did you use the word protocolagorically?
I don't think it's
Okay.
even a real word. I think they
No,
made
it's
it
not. They just made it up. So, like, I don't know what you meant by it. Unless you, I don't know, but I guess it's good enough that they used it.
Was there anybody in this movie that you recognized? Because I didn't think there was until I looked up the cast, and then I started noticing a few things that I recognized, but for the most part, I wasn't familiar with pretty much anybody in the movie.
Well, the first, well, I'll say this according to the first time when I saw the film. So the first time I recognized two people in particular. Richard Chamberlain, who plays the prince, because I knew he was in like Dr. Kildare. That was his big American sitcom back in the day. And I don't know if it was a sitcom or a drama show, but it was his TV show. I never saw it, but like I knew him from that. And like he's also in a disaster film in the 70s that I like a lot, but it's considered like one of the worst films ever made. But he's in it. It's called The Swarm. Have you ever seen it? It's like with kill. It's like killer bees attacking. Like an area, but it's so star-studded. It has Richard Chamberlain, it has Michael Caine, it has Henry Fonda, it has Slim Pickens, it has Olivia de Havilland, Fred MacMurray. Everyone who's you wouldn't think would be in this movie is in it, and I enjoyed it. Anyway, I knew him from that. And Michael Hordern, who plays the king, I knew him because I like him a lot. He also appeared in two Christmas Carol adaptations. He was Jacob Well, technically three, I guess, because he was Jacob Marley's ghost in Scrooge with Alistair Sim, and he voiced Jacob Marley in the
The other Alistair Sim one, the animated one.
the animated one. Yeah, I forgot that Alistair Sim wasn't that too. And there was also another version. I think it might have been a TV version, but I watched it on YouTube. I remember where he actually plays Scrooge. I don't know what it was called. Well, I mean, I guess it's just called Christmas Carol, but I mean, I don't know anything else about that production.
Let's
But
look it up because.
yeah, because I know it was definitely one night when I was watching, when I went through that year when I watched like a bunch. I know that was one I definitely watched, but I think it was more like a TV slash stage production kind of thing. But
I
I
should
don't
look
remember
him up
anything
on
else about it.
IMDb because I probably just looked at Wikipedia and they probably had just a selected filmography. So I saw the two Alistair Sim Christmas carols, but I don't remember another one. I would be interested to see if I recognized him from that one because he looked familiar to me. And it's been so long since I've seen the 51 version that. That can't have been it. And he's, of course, not a face in the animated one. And then he also played the Mock Turtle in 1972, Alice in Wonderland, which again, it's been quite a while since I watched that one. So I'm just wondering what the other one is, because I feel like I know his face.
I found it on YouTube. It looks like it's a version from 1977. It's like only 58 minutes long. So it's probably a TV thing.
I don't think I've seen this, but now I want to watch this one. And I'm not planning on doing Christmas carols this year. I'm doing Cinderella through the end of the year.
There you go. I messed up your whole thing.
But now I really want to watch this one. Partly because Zoe Wanamaker is Belle, and I know her from Doctor Who. She played Cassandra. If you've ever watched Doctor Who, Cassandra was the last human who basically reduced herself down to a flap of skin through through plastic surgery, trying to get thinner and thinner and thinner. And
Interesting.
she's such a great character actress.
Yeah, I never seen I haven't seen Doctor Who, but I've seen her in like Agatha Christie's Poirot, where she plays Mrs. Oliver. So like I know her from that.
I don't think I've seen this one, but he when I saw him, I thought he would make a great Scrooge, so I'm glad to see that
Yeah.
he actually has been Scrooge.
And there's a character actor named John Lemesurier who I like a lot, and it looks like he's Jacob Marley's ghost in this version. And he might have played in another version of Christmas Carol as well, I'm not sure. But yeah, I think I like this version. I can't remember, it's been a while, but I definitely remember Michael Horton standing out here.
So was that the only ones that you recognized
Oh
from
yeah,
this
sorry,
cast?
going back to your question. Yeah, those were only two I really recognized during my first viewing. Yeah, upon the second view, and I didn't recognize, like, there are faces. I knew, like, Edith Evans as the Dowager Queen. I know her face. I don't really know what I know her from, but
I figured out why I know her face,
oh,
and
okay.
you do too.
What is it?
She was the ghost of Christmas past in Scrooge.
Oh, great. There we go. Another Scrooge reference here.
And technically, there's another one because Kenneth
Oh, great.
Moore, who played the Chamberlain, was the ghost of Christmas present in Scrooge from 1970.
All three of these people were Scrooge. Wow.
So many connections to A Christmas Carol.
Wow. Wow. I don't know what to say.
I
I guess they were just the British actors that were working at the time.
guess so. I mean, it's a similar time period, so
Correct, yeah.
there was also Annette Crosby as the fairy godmother, but I cannot figure out why she looks familiar. Like, I looked through her IMDb, I could not find it. Like, the only thing that I could possibly think of is in the 90s, there was a Britcom called One Foot in the Grave, which ran on PBS for maybe a year. So I know I've seen her in that, but like she was a lot older. So I don't know. May that could be why. Maybe just her face was like in the back of my memory.
Did you see Into the Woods?
The
It
Disney
did.
movie,
Yeah.
was she in that?
Yeah, she was in that. She was Red Riding Hood's granny.
Oh, okay. I missed that one. But
So,
I only saw that one once. I haven't watched it again since I saw it in the
oh,
theater. So I don't
maybe
feel
it's
like
not
that one would be it
that.
either.
Yeah, I didn't recognize her either. Besides, I mean, only until after I looked up her filmography. And she was the voice of Lady Galadriel in the animated Lord of the Rings movie.
I saw that. I haven't watched that yet. I'm planning eventually, hopefully, maybe, to do Lord of the Rings for every version ever, but that's going to be an undertaking because I will want to do the extended versions. And yeah, I don't feel like tackling that right now.
Oh yeah, you need like what, a whole couple days just for that to watch the movies.
And I'm trying to make these episodes shorter, but I don't know that that's going to be possible with Lord of the Rings.
Oh, definitely not. And Margaret Lockwood, I know her now because I recently watched Alfred Hitchcock film The Lady Vanishes, like only a couple months ago, and she was the star in that. So it was interesting to see her as, you know, 40 years later. I think this was actually her, prior to this, her last movie was in the 50s. So, like, I guess she was retired for, like, 20 years, and then they got her back to come out for this movie. But that's pretty much everyone I knew.
Yeah, there was nobody that I really knew. It was just once I started looking at their filmographies that I was like, oh, yeah.
Even the actress who plays Cinderella, Gemma Craven, I don't think she, like, became anyone super famous.
Yeah, I did not recognize her at all. I think she was mostly on stage.
Oh, okay.
She was a theater actress.
Okay.
Anyway, I guess we can actually get into the movie.
Yeah, might as well get in.
Since it is so long, I don't think we need to talk about like literally every plot point, but I do want to talk about like the main things about it that make it different from other Cinderella stories. And like you said, the main difference is the fact that it's more about the prince than it is about Cinderella.
Correct. I think I even read somewhere where like that was the intention. Like, they wanted to make a Cinderella film that was told more from the prince's point of view.
Mm-hmm. And like Cinderella's been told so many times, it's nice that somebody was trying to think of a new way to tell the same story.
Mm-hmm. So this came out in 1976. I'm trying to think, do you know what the last like big Cinderella film prior to this would have been? Would it have been the Disney animated version? Or did they have any other big ones in between?
The biggest one that I can think of is, I don't remember the exact year, but it would have been Rodgers and Hammerstein's television one.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was both the Julie Andrews one in the 50s, and then there was a remake in the 60s.
Yeah, with
or
Leslie
maybe
Ann Warren,
maybe
yeah.
It was in the 50s, too. I don't remember the year exactly. Those episodes will come before this, so just look back at the podcast list. I'll have put the years on at that point.
There we go.
But would have been the big ones after Disney's version.
Okay, that one was in 1965.
Okay, yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. But that one was apparently a huge deal. Like, it had great ratings. Like, everybody loved that one. So I'm going to guess that was probably the biggest Cinderella before this one.
That one also was a musical. That was a Rodgers and Hammerstein musical.
Yeah.
Now we got a Sherman's Brothers.
And I've kind of been, I don't know what the right word is, like, not engrossed, but like those movies have been like at the forefront of my mind for the past, I don't know how long, because I just did episodes on those. So I've been watching and doing notes on those.
Oh,
so
okay.
I couldn't help but compare this to that one. And I kept, it was funny, I kept expecting, like, because I've seen three different versions of Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella now. I kept expecting those songs to come up in this.
Instead, you get what comforting thing to know. Where they sing about their place in the family grave.
Yeah.
Well, not even a grave. I guess it's an entombment or whatever.
And I think I was, because those movies were also at the forefront of my mind, I think I was kind of shocked at how awful her stepfamily was. Like, I mean, her stepfamily's always bad, but like in Rodgers and Hammerstein's versions, they're like funny. They're like funny mean. Mm-hmm. And like, obviously they're bad people, but like even in the Julie Andrews one, especially, like, they're not horrid, horrid people.
Yeah.
Like, I think they even come to the wedding or they're talking about how great it will be that she's going to be royal or whatever. Like, they're not nice people, but they're not evil.
Yeah.
But the stepmother, she's like straight up awful. She's the kind of evil that, like, I can't wait for something bad to happen to this person.
Yeah, so she was pretty wicked. I don't know if I'd say she's more wicked than, like, Disney's animated version, like Determining.
I was trying to think of like which one would be more evil, and I suppose they're kind of, maybe they're about on par with each other, just more evil in maybe different ways.
I think it's because the lady in the Disney animated version, they make Lady Tremaine more of an antagonist. So, like, even at the end of the movie, like, she's locking Cinderella up in the room so that she can't try on the slipper. And in this movie, they kind of give up on the step family plot point. And, like, it just ends. And they don't learn anything or anything. It's just like, oh, that's
kinda
it.
Yes.
Yeah.
The first half, they're straight up awful. They're like rubbing it in her face that her parents are dead, making her basically their slave. But then once she gets out, they're not really in the movie that much anymore.
Correct. Yeah, they just
and then it goes on for, we'll get there, but the movie goes on a lot longer than I expected it to go on. Like, we got to a point where I was like, okay, we're finally about done, because I was like, at this point it's like 2 a.m and I'm ready to go to bed. I'm like, oh good, we're about done. And I looked at how much time is left and I was like, what
another hour and a half. What? Yeah, it is a pretty long movie, and because of it, they do stretch a lot with the Cinderella story and add stuff with the Cinderella story. And again, because it's not really a Cinderella story, even though it's called The Slip of the Rose Story Cinderella. It's again more a Prince Edward. His name is Edward in this Prince Edward story, and he's played by Richard Chamberlain.
But even though it felt long, part of it only was because I was tired. Like, I was never bored through this movie. I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I had a feeling you'd like this. I think that's one reason I also suggested it to you, because I feel you would appreciate this. I also think it's also long because of all the songs, but I mean,
yeah,
that's the point of it being a musical.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, the main thrust of the plot is the prince is supposed to get married, which is in most Cinderella versions, and his parents are insisting, but in this one they have a more, like, even though it's ridiculous, like, they've got all these made up country names, it's more in the interest of preventing war. Part of which I don't exactly understand, because they make it sound like, well, there's this neighboring, Caroldvald, the country where they've sent him off to, they want him to marry the princess from there to make an alliance between their countries or whatever.
Yeah.
And he comes back, and there was a great line about his father placing too much trust in the portrait painters of
because she didn't have any teeth, Dad.
Yeah, he basically comes back and says she was old, bald, and had no teeth.
Old, bald, had no teeth. He was catfished before. That, it was a thing.
I even wrote down, this is like old timey catfishing.
Pretty much. And his father, Michael Horner, King. Did he have a name? Or just King? He was my favorite character in this film. I found him incredibly hilarious.
But the thing that I didn't really understand was, because of this slight, they make it sound like Caroldvald might attack them. So this, him getting married will prevent this? I didn't really understand why marrying just any random princess would prevent Caroldvald from attacking them.
I can't remember did they specifically say it was Caroldsville that they felt threat from, or I thought they just said it was just they felt threat from like outside forces, but they didn't really specify which country.
I thought it was because word got back from Caroldsville what he thought about their princess, so then they were thinking about attacking. Okay. I'm not 100% sure. Like I said, I was kind of confused by that.
I guess the alliance would be because even if he marries another princess from another country, so now they're allies. So even if Caroldsville attacks, they're attacking two countries instead of one. So that would deter them.
Yeah.
But that's the political science of the Slip in the Rose. And I know you weren't too fond of that, but I love the first two songs. I love Why Can't I Be Two People, where the prince sings about how hard it is being a prince and why can't he just be have a royal hymn and like a common hymn. I think there's some really good lyrics and rhyming schemes in that. And I also love What Has Love Got to Do with Being Married, that the king and queen sing to the prince.
I feel like with What Has Love Got to Do with Being Married, I feel like I've heard that somewhere else, not in those specific lyrics. And I don't remember where I would have heard it, but I'm wondering if what's in the back of my mind was based, like somebody saw this and got inspired, or if this was based on something earlier.
because I don't remember what I'm thinking of, but that sentiment about royal people marrying and not actually liking their partner.
Yeah. Or maybe I was just singing it on a random podcast one day and it got stuck in your head.
No, I feel like it was a plot in something, like a king and queen talking about getting married, and the way they were talking about each other made it pretty clear that they didn't actually like each other, but they did it because they had to. Which, I mean, that could be something that's in a lot of things. So
I think I've heard tell that there's a similar plot point in like Mulan 2. I haven't seen it, but I think that's what the plot's about. Something like that. Like the Mulan, there's three girls and like three princesses, and they have to get married to prevent a war or something.
That's probably not what I'm thinking of, because I saw that once years and years ago and I never watched it again. Okay. And I don't remember hardly anything about that movie.
That's pretty much what I hear about that movie. So one day I'll watch all the Disney Toon Studios films, but we're not there yet.
I'm waiting to either watch or rewatch them until I get to them in the podcast, and then I'll probably never watch them again after that.
There you go. Some of them are good. I like Lion King 2 a lot, and Aladdin the King of Thieves. I can watch those any day.
Those ones I feel like I've seen more than once. Most of them I've only seen once. Like Little Mermaid 2, only seen it once. The other Little Mermaid movie, only seen it once. Hunchback the Cinderella 2, only seen it once.
It's just one too many.
Yeah. Surprisingly, Cinderella 3, I mean, there'll be a podcast episode before this one about that one. It's not bad.
I haven't seen that one yet, but everyone says that. So I'm interested to see what that's like.
Shockingly okay. I wouldn't say this is an amazing movie, but like for a direct-to-video sequel to a beloved classic 1950s animated film, it's shockingly not bad.
And the second sequel too, not just the first sequel.
Yeah, the third movie in a franchise where the second movie was absolute garbage.
Yes. If I see it, I'll let you know.
Anyways, I guess we can talk about Cinderella as well.
Might as well.
I mean, that's kind of the point of the series.
I guess. There we go. You're not doing a Prince Edward series, sadly.
I liked Cinderella, but she was not as memorable as other Cinderellas have been to me.
No, like, I would actually say she was probably my least, I don't want to say least favorite character, but I agree that I don't know if it was Gemma Craven's performance, or is it just because Cinderella is, in this version, meant to be, you know, not the main focus, but there's just something about her that doesn't stand out or leaves a mark with you.
She's just quiet. And she doesn't do a whole lot other than just do what she's told.
Yeah.
I think the main thing I liked about the Cinderella side of the plot was the fairy godmother. I loved her.
She had a very good fairy godmother, played by Anna Crosby. She was a lot of fun.
Yeah, she was great.
And like, she comes from a line of fairy godmothers where they're helping like all kind of other characters. She's writing the 1001 Arabian Nights. Mm-hmm. She had like 400 something to go. And she mentions like later on in the movie, she's like, same thing with Snow White. The girls never do what they're told. Guys are so much easier to deal with.
And she also has a cute dog, which I'm not sure if it's her dog or just a dog, because she says it showed up when she came in. So I don't know who owns this dog, but it follows her around and helps her. So
exactly. It's I guess it's hers now.
I guess so. She talked about wanting a dog, so she can adopt this one.
And she just like appears. Sometimes she walks to places, sometimes she disappears. So
I thought it was interesting that they don't lean very heavily into special effects, which is fine. Because with some, like in the previous Rodgers and Hammerstein one from, I think, 65, the special effects left something to be desired.
Okay.
So I liked the fact that they kind of skirted around them, like they had things happen off screen, or they would pan away, like when Cinderella gets her dress, they panned away from her and then panned back.
Yeah.
And she had changed. I prefer it when they do that rather than try and go with a special effect that they weren't actually that capable of pulling off.
Mm-hmm. It worked well with it. It fit well with this version, I think.
And it felt like it made this one feel a little more grounded. For a while, I actually didn't think that there was going to be any magic. until the fairy godmother showed up and it was kind of obvious that she is magic.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't make that a huge focus.
Correct.
It was more about the politics than magic.
Yeah, this is the politics version of Cinderella. I think it's also because it's a period piece musical, like most of the budget is probably in the costume and the cinematography and stuff.
Yes.
So they definitely probably couldn't afford anything extra for special effects.
And actually, speaking of the period, I was kind of surprised at when they set this, because I don't know why, but I expected, maybe because I had the Sword and the Rose in my mind, I thought this was going to be like 1600s.
Yeah.
This is more like 1700s, maybe early 1800s, but definitely not as early as I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Is it because of the wigs that they were used? Is that what gave you the time?
Partly the costumes.
Mm.
It was definitely not medieval. Like, I was expecting something slightly post-medieval, and it definitely wasn't.
Okay, no, definitely not. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not like an expert on time periods based on costumes, but I've seen enough stuff about it that I know that this is not as early as I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was just because I had the Sword and the Rose in my mind that I thought this was going to be around the same time period.
There's old King Henry VIII. Where is he?
Yeah, the fairy godmother, she's probably my favorite character. I felt like that she ad-libbed things.
I believe
like
it.
Like, she just, I don't know, the way she talked felt like she was just making off-the-cuff remarks. Like, she has a pet chicken, and she's, like, yelling at the chicken at one point. It just feels like she's, like, the chicken can't be trained to do what it's doing, I don't think.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like anything that she says to this chicken is in the script.
Yeah.
Because she's reacting in real time to what the chicken is doing.
Yeah, I think it's part of her method acting as well, probably.
Yeah, I thought she's great.
Like, she feels like she's not putting on a performance. Like, she just feels natural.
Yeah, definitely. And she had a lot of great lines, too, that probably were in the script. Mm-hmm. But she's talking about putting people to the test before helping them, like people who are wishing. And she said something about Cinderella passed the test, but she never even bothered with the unholy trio upstairs.
That was
talking
really
about
like,
the step family.
Yeah. It's like, I know that. He's like, I ain't going to bother with them.
And another thing that I really liked was there's just one tiny line in the movie, but after she's sent to the ball, she's introduced as the Princess Incognita.
Yes.
I don't know why. I just that really made me laugh. I liked that.
Princess made up name. Princess made up name. Where is she from? So I guess we should talk about the ball situation. It's because the king decides to host a ball at the behest of his royal advisors. Well, first of all, they sing the protocolic correct song, which is my favorite song in the whole film. And they, you know, seeing these guys do like the French can-can is a lot of fun. And
yeah, that was that song.
Yes.
That's another reason why that one felt so long. I was like, this is getting ridiculous. But I guess I was never bored. I just thought it was very ridiculous what these advisor people were doing.
I think that's the best way to describe this movie. It's like, you're not going to be bored. It's you will be entertained.
Yeah, definitely.
So they do a ball where they invite every royal person of note. Like, so it's not just limited.
Oh, I forgot. I was going to mention that.
Yeah.
They were like, the neighboring countries were killing off the messengers.
That was hilarious. They just shot an arrow into the guy and he died. Poor guy. And I guess royal people of note includes like higher class people, because Cinderella's stepmother and stepsisters get invited.
Well, they only did that after not enough
oh, yeah,
people
yeah,
either
yeah.
accepted the invitation,
mm-hmm.
or the messengers just never returned.
Correct.
I think they said that only 6 out of 16 invitations were accepted. So they're like, okay, we need to like beef up the guest list by inviting some people from the kingdom. So
okay,
they
yeah.
went out to nobility instead of just royalty.
Just royalty, okay, that makes sense. So then that's where the stepmother and stepsisters get invited.
Yeah.
And of course they keep Cinderella home. I guess one thing we skipped, if we're going chronologically, is your favorite song. What a comforting thing to do. So like, while all this is happening, the prince has a friend who's like one of his servants, I guess. or someone in the castle. I forget his name. They hang out together, talk about life and everything that's going on. And one day they're just hanging around the prince's family's crypt with all a bunch of dead kings and queens buried there. And he just sings "What a Comforting Thing to Know," which is a very catchy Sherman Brothers song about having a place to go when it's your time to go. It has a very interesting cinematography. Like, both Richard Chamberlain and the other guy, they have some very strong, like, upper body strength when they were, like, when they were hanging from the poles at the top and then did the spin over it. I was like, wow, that's some control.
Yeah.
Durrell also had a song, "Once I Was Loved," but I don't remember anything about that.
Yeah, that was one thing. Like I said, she's kind of quiet and forgettable.
Yeah.
Even her songs weren't that memorable.
And again, I think it's like it's because the prince is the main character, so she kind of serves the like what the prince is in other Cinderella versions, where he's just kind of forgettable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, another thing that I thought was ridiculous but funny and memorable was when the king and advisors were talking about the party.
Yeah,
they say that they're going to pay for it by creating a tax on snobbery, because all the nobility will definitely pay that.
Well, I also had a favorite line in that scene when they were looking at the maps, and one of the elderly guys is like, "What I tend to do is I look at the brown part. I assume that's the land. I look at the blue part. I think that's the water." Like, thank you, sir.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. I felt like at times the movie was like super serious, and then something like that would happen, and it's like, this is ridiculous.
I think everything with the king is supposed to be comedy relief. So,
yeah, probably.
Yeah, anything that he's involved in. Because the prince and Cinderella, they're not particularly funny. I think they serve the
other than his one song in the crypt.
Yeah, "What a Comforting Thing to Know." That's more of a, like, an ironic funny, I guess.
Yes, it's a different kind of funny. His yes. father is a ridiculous funny. But yeah, you have the ball, and everything happens mostly as you would expect it to happen. She shows up, they fall in love, clock strikes midnight, she runs away, leaves the glass slipper. And at that point, I was like, oh, I guess we're getting towards the end.
Oh, were you wrong?
We're only like halfway through.
From here is like, I mean, a lot is has been different than the Cinderella story, but definitely from here on, it's definitely different than any previous yes. Cinderella story.
Yeah, they go in their own direction with this.
Yeah. So at the ball, one of my a line I like is when the prince is meeting all the princesses and the king points to him, he's like, "She's got good teeth."
Oh, yeah. It's talking about the prince having an obsession with good teeth.
Yes.
Because he rejected the previous princess because of no teeth.
No teeth. So not just good teeth, but having teeth. Yeah, he's like, yeah, this one has teeth. People weren't so picky back in my day. Like you said, Cinderella end up, the fairy godmother transforms her, but she makes a dress for her. And she transforms, you know, the pumpkin into the coach. Okay, and what creeped me out so much was when they both the dancing mice and that creepy as heck frog, man. That is something out of a horror movie. You could I was waiting for him to come off the screen. Oh my gosh, he was frightening.
I thought it was kind of ridiculous because the way they were moving, I was like, is this a ballet now?
Yeah, I like it.
It was like they stopped the movie to show off these ballet dancers wearing mice heads.
And I was thinking, okay, so maybe we do have a dance sequence here, but then it's over in like, you know, 10 seconds.
And they just turn into people. Like when they were dead, when they went in this whole long thing with these mice, because we'd already seen like actual mice crawling on the table. So when they turned into these dancing ballet mice, I was like, oh, well, that's different. They're going to have these half-human, half-mice hybrids. Because it went on for a while.
Yeah.
But then they turned into humans. So I was like, okay, that was odd.
And the frog, oh my gosh. The jumping frog man, then he turned into a man. I was like, oh, thank God for this. He creeped me out so much.
Well, I feel like there was Maybe I'm thinking of a Pinocchio, but I feel like there was like a human animal hybrid that never fully turned human. I might be thinking of there was a dog in Pinocchio, but I feel like there was a Cinderella at some point that I've seen where they didn't fully turn into people. And I just figured that's where they were going with this.
Yeah, again, I don't know if I can't remember if I've seen that before. But I was so happy when they did turn into people. But then, yeah, she goes to the ball as Princess Incognita, as you said. And they fall in love and whatnot. They have a cool song together, Secret Kingdom. It's a pretty song with the music has been played like throughout the whole movie. So it's like their song. It's their romantic duet. And then, yeah, midnight, she leaves. Slipper. I was trying to pause the video as she lost her slipper because it looks like they planted the slipper there and then they zoomed in on it after. Yeah, like it didn't look like she tripped or anything and then her slipper fell off. And I kept rewinding and rewinding it to see, but it was hard to tell, but it looked like the editing wasn't good enough that they just placed the slipper there and she just ran past it. Instead of looking like, you know, oh, she might have slipped or something.
I didn't notice, but I was also kind of tired when I was watching. Like, I was, the longer this movie went on, the more tired I was getting. So I didn't notice that.
And you were thinking this was going to end.
Yes. And again, this is nothing against the movie. This is just having assumed wrongly that this was going to be a short movie that I could start at 11 p.m.
Oh, no, yeah, it is. When I went to rewatch, I watched this like 2 days ago. When I went to rewatch it, I was also surprised. Oh, this is 2 hours and 22 minutes. I don't remember it being that long.
Yeah, well, I think if they had ended it where you would expect it to end, it would have been a regular-sized movie.
But we can't have that.
Instead, you just keep going.
So what they keep going with is, you know, they do the thing about whoever fits the glass slipper, you know, she's going to be the woman. So they go around the town or the city or whatever, the country, trying on the glass slipper on different women's feet. And of course, they don't get to Cinderella because she's, you know, she's downstairs in the dungeon.
But they don't, I was surprised that they, like, again, because I've watched so many recently, like the Rodgers and Hammerstein one, I was expecting there to be some sort of a scene where she's prevented from trying on a slipper, but they, like, don't even, she's not around. It's, like, not even an option that she would be around.
Mm-hmm. And again, I think that's also the whole, you know, not making Cinderella the focal point.
Mm-hmm.
So like when all the soldiers come back and they find out that it's been to no avail, they just give up. And then he has the slipper encased in like a glass box as a memorial outside the castle.
It's very dramatic.
Yes. And that's where I was like, I can't remember where this movie goes after this.
Well, I was confused about like why it went in the direction that it went because like he memorializes the shoe and whatever, but at some point he gets it and like throws it out a window and she finds it and then she's like dancing with it.
Yes.
And then suddenly she's recognized because she's dancing with the shoe. It's like, oh, well, obviously that's her, not just some random lady that wandered by and grabbed a shoe and started dancing around in a field with it.
Literally, that's what I was thinking too. It was like she wasn't wearing this shoe or anything. She just picked it up.
Yeah.
And the servant's like, oh yeah, that must be her. Let me get the prince. I found your princess. She was holding the shoe. like I thought what they were gonna do is like, you know, Cinderella had the other slipper. So like maybe when the prince threw it out the window, it would now that's the other thing, he threw it out the window, it didn't break at all, which is weird, but you think it would shatter and then she would have the other one to prove, oh, she was it, but nope, she's just serendipitously passing by the castle somehow and finds it, I guess, recognizes it. Well, I guess the dog brings her to it, then she kind of happily holds it and dances with it, and the servant finds out and he calls the prince and they're reunited.
Okay.
Like, all right, if you believe it, I believe it.
It doesn't really make sense, but it's one of those things where it's a fairy tale, so I'm just going to go with it.
Yeah. And then it's implied that they're going to get married, and he goes to the stepmother and, you know, to ask for Cinderella's hand in marriage. And they're, of course, like, shocked.
The stepsisters are, like, sobbing.
And she's, like, hitting them through the whole thing. Then when they leave, when they're about to leave, Cinderella's like, I forgive you. she's like, "How dare she forgive me?" Which is kind of the end of the stepmother. Like we do see them again, but like in terms of their point to the film, that's really where it ends for them.
Yeah, they show up again at the wedding, but
yeah,
that's the last really notable thing about them. I like with how awful she was. I expected some sort of
yeah
retribution.
Mm-hmm. And again, I guess it's again the whole Cinderella's not the main character thing.
Yeah, yeah. But even then, that's not where this ends.
Nope.
Every time something like that happens, this is like everybody complains about The Lord of the Rings. Like the last movie has so many endings. Mm. And I never got that with that movie because it made sense. But this is my Lord of the Rings. Like, okay, this is where it's going to end. Nope. Okay, this is where it's going to end. Nope. Okay, this is where it's going to end. Nope.
I never got that Lord of the Rings either. I got that with, did you see Ford versus Ferrari?
No.
With Christian Bale, yeah. That's what I got with that. Every time that movie looked like it was about to end, something else happened. It just didn't know how to end. But yeah, that was my Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, they go back to the castle. They're making plans to get married, but then his advisor, the king, like the king's,
yeah,
the chamberlain, I guess, he comes and tells her if they get married, they're going to have to go to war. And
yeah,
basically, she needs to dump the prince to save the kingdom.
Yeah.
So then she has this whole song that was very dramatic about,
yes,
making him tell him that I never loved him because she doesn't want him to come looking for her or whatever.
Yeah.
But like that, the whole song ended up kind of being pointless because,
yes,
like,
exactly.
I don't know that he ever actually said that she doesn't love him, because, but he knows that his father has broken them up. Like, yeah, he doesn't blame Cinderella at all.
Yeah, yeah. Then he tells them, his parents, that, okay, look, I'll marry whoever you want.
Yeah, he basically says he'll get married for the good of the kingdom, but something about his marital duties will go no further than the altar. He's not continuing the family line. There will be no heirs from him. So basically, they played themselves by forcing him to do this.
Mm-hmm. In the meanwhile, Cinderella, I don't know where she's escaped to, but she escaped to some.
She kind of got like pleasantly exiled.
Pleasantly exiled.
Like,
yes,
they sent her to a nice place.
Which was just, I mean, nice of them.
Yeah.
She's singing on a swing.
That, yeah.
Like, it's supposed to be representation of the painting, The Swing.
I wondered about that. Like, mm-hmm, that was the first thing I thought. I was like, this is kind of like that painting, the one that people point to as like the inspiration for Rapunzel.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that was... I didn't know about that.
Yeah, the something about like the way the painting was lit or something that was inspired Glen Keane when he was making Tangled.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah, anyways, that I thought that, and I didn't know that that's actually what they were going for.
Yeah, literally.
It just reminded me of that.
Yeah, it went literally with even like the dress she was wearing.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I caught something that was intended then. I just there thought I was making connections that I was making, not there that were actually intended.
You have culture. I didn't. I didn't know this until afterwards. Sorry, I wrote it off. So.
No, I had no idea. It reminded me of that painting, but I didn't. Yeah. Think that it could have been intentional. I just thought it seemed similar.
Yeah, so that it was that, and then the fairy godmother comes up to her and it's just like, look, I didn't put all this work in for nothing. Go back and go marry the prince. And she's like, okay.
I love her. She's so great.
That's where she makes the line about Snow White, like, oh, Snow White was just like, these men are so much easier to do as they're told, or something like that. But then, like you said, this makes the whole dramatic thing about, oh, tell him I don't love him and I'm going to be exiled. Like, it was just pointless when, like, 5 minutes later, she's coming back to marry the prince.
Yeah. It seemed to extend the movie unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She ends up basically interrupting the wedding because he's going through with getting married for political reasons.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just felt weird that she came back in the middle of the wedding. I felt like they should have done it a bit differently.
Yeah.
But I think they wanted to pay off this other thing that I guess we didn't really talk about, his weird cousin who, like, he has some line about wanting the second pick of the party or whatever.
He wants a girl.
I didn't know what was up with him, because I wondered if the fairy godmother like did some magic on him to make him fall in love with this girl.
Oh, I that's what I thought. I thought she used magic to make the girl fall in love with him.
Oh, maybe.
I feel that makes more sense, because when the princess is looking with like those eyes at him, like, yeah, that must be magic.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Because they had the whole thing about this is going to cause war if he leaves this girl at the altar, but then, I don't know if this is quite dramatic enough to be called a deus ex machina, but, oh, the prince's cousin, he wants to marry her now, so now there's not going to be a war.
There we go. Solve that. The screenwriters came to the rescue there.
But I guess it makes sense, because they did seed that at the beginning or
the middle. Yeah, he did want somebody, so.
And he literally got the second choice. Like, they had the whole thing about him wanting the second choice at the ball, but now it's literally second choice of a wife.
Of a wife, so. He's like, hey, I'll take what I get. And she seems happy about it. Again, I don't know. I feel she's been magicked into it, but let's just say she's happier.
Sure.
So then all is right, and the prince and Cinderella get married, and the cousin and what's her name get married.
Was she the one who, in the montage of all the people like getting killed, was she the one who just fainted?
I can't remember.
Because there was one of the princesses that they sent an invitation to fainted, and I was wondering if it was her, because I think she fainted at a different point during the ceremony.
Okay. Like,
is this supposed to be the same person?
I thought it was someone completely new that we haven't seen before, but I could be wrong.
I don't know. Yeah, anyways, they live happily ever after.
Now we're going back to what we know about from a Cinderella story.
Yeah, the end.
The end.
The actual end.
The actual end after 5 non-ends.
I don't know that it was quite that many, but it felt like it was.
3. Let's say 3. So I go again. Overall, I do like this movie a lot. I love the songs and the style and acting, the comedy, the drama, the cinematography, and all that. But the second half, like after Cinderella loses her slipper, it makes me question whether I wanted to see the Sherman Brothers do more screenplays. some of me really wishes they did, but then when I look at what the second half of this movie was, it just felt they didn't know where they're going with this. It felt long, but it was like they didn't know how to end it, and they kept.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah,
I don't know. It didn't feel direct and focused. But again, it's not just them, because Brian Forbes, the director, he was also. Got the screenplay credit, so I don't know whose idea it was exactly, but that was definitely the weak part of the movie, I would say.
Yeah, it could have benefited from a bit of trimming.
Yeah.
I mean,
or editing, or at least revising.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was fine, but there were scenes that could have gone and nothing would have changed.
Yeah. I think that's just true about like all musical films.
Probably. Well, especially when one that has this many songs, because there were quite a lot of songs.
Yeah, even for a musical, there were a lot of songs. Oh, another song I liked a lot, but we didn't talk about, because it, I guess, not really super important, was Position and Positioning, where the prince's servant is like, he's in love with like this other, I don't know,
she's some type of nobility, but I don't remember how exactly.
She's like a nobility to the queen and the queen mother, but.
Anyway, yeah, she's not like she doesn't have much power, but she's high enough above his station that there's no chance.
There's no chance. So the whole song's about everyone seeks out, you know, marriage with, you know, their status quo, and you can't go above that or anything. And that's how it is. That's how it was. And that's how it always shall be, as they sing. And then afterwards, the prince makes him, he knights him. But I like the song, though.
Yeah, none of the songs were bad. Some I felt went on a little bit too long, but it was mostly good songwriting. I mean, it's Sherman Brothers, so obviously.
I was reading one of the critics who reviewed this, and they said, like, there's a bunch of forgettable songs for the Shermans who did well with Mary Poppins and Tom Sawyer. I'm like, well, no. Tom Sawyer had a lot more forgettable songs than this movie did.
I don't think I even knew they did a Tom Sawyer film.
Okay, yeah, they did one in the 70s with Johnny Whitaker and Jodie Foster.
And, really?
Yes. That's probably something you could check out on YouTube, Tom Sawyer, if you ever do that.
It is on my list of ones that I would like to do. There are a lot of Tom Sawyers that I would like to see. I guess I'll have to put that on there. I didn't realize there was one that they did.
Yeah,
they and did Jodie Foster, too.
Correct. Yeah, the songs on that were not all that great from what I remember. So I was taken aback. It's like, no, the songs of this are much better than the Tom Sawyer. And then afterwards, they did the Huckleberry Finn. So they also did the songs for that. I haven't seen that one.
No, I had no idea.
There you go. Two more for your list.
Eventually. It'll probably be a few years down the line if I keep doing this.
2027.
I feel like I already know the ones I want to do next year. And if I don't want to change it, because some of it's ones I've been trying to get to for years. I mean, this is not any different. I've been trying to do Cinderella for at least a year. There's too many.
No, there are, yeah. How did you feel about the Sherman Brothers doing the screenplay?
I didn't realize it at first until I started reading. I think I was probably reading in the middle of it because I kept stopping to take notes, and then I'd read some on. That's why it took me until 3 a.m. to finish the movie, because of how I do notes. And so I didn't realize until probably like halfway through the movie that they had any hand in the writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they did fine, but like you said, they probably could have been reined in a little bit or maybe edited down,
because
it did go on with a lot of things that were probably unnecessary.
Yeah, like again, I'm not upset with the length of the film. It's just the clarity of it,
I think
that's more what I needed trimmed. But it does make me curious. I always want to know what the Sherman Brothers as directors would have been like. I think this is the closest thing we'll get to seeing that.
Probably.
Well, I mean, of course, because Robert Sherman's dead. But
I was going to say, there's only one left at this point. Only
one left at this point.
Yeah, overall, I enjoyed this one. I don't think it's among my top favorite Cinderellas, but it's definitely worth watching. I did like it a lot.
I know a lot of people do like this. Like I was reading like YouTube comments, and I heard a lot of people saying, you know, this is their favorite version. Or like Ever After used to be their favorite version, but they realized they like this a lot better.
I'm going to do Ever After next, so I need to watch it again. But I feel like I don't think this is going to pass Ever After. Like, I really liked Ever After back in the day, so.
I never seen it, so I don't know what to think of it.
It is the reason that I expected that this one was not going to be magical, because of there is no magic in Ever After. It's the Cinderella story without a fairy godmother. I think Leonardo da Vinci is the fairy godmother role. He makes inventions that help her get the prince.
Interesting.
Yeah. But it's a very dramatic film. It's not it's not like, even though that sounds kind of ridiculous, it's not played for funny. It's a good movie. I really like it. It was probably the first other version of Cinderella that I saw besides the Disney one, and it's one of my top favorite versions of Cinderella, and at least in my memory. I need to watch it again. I haven't seen it in years.
Yeah, I've only heard good things about it, but yeah, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I think the Disney animated version, that's still my favorite. This one's really high up there, too.
I don't know if... I kind of want to say that the 90s Rodger and Hammerstein with Brandy is my favorite.
Okay.
Because that's probably the one I watched the most growing up.
That was what I was going to say. I didn't grow up with that, so I don't have nostalgia for it. I think I just saw it once randomly on YouTube, and I was like... I think I laughed a lot.
It also has like all my favorite Cinderella songs, so it's probably my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I need to watch Ever After again to decide for sure, but it'll probably be either Ever After or the Disney one next.
Mm-hmm. The only real disappointing thing with Slippin' the Rose, like we said, is I think Cinderella herself.
Yeah, but again, like you said, she's not the main character, it's the prince. She's not
the main character, so there we go. Is Ella Enchanted a Cinderella story?
Yes. It is a very different Cinderella story, but it is still Cinderella.
I know I saw that movie, and I thought
actually
it was...
that one needs to be in my top few because I love that movie. That's one of those, like, it was one of the first movies that I saw that made me rethink my hardline stance on the book is better than the movie, because it is so different from the book. But I love the movie, and the book is really good too. But it's not the same as the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So then it made me realize, okay, I need to give some movies some grace for being different than the book, because I loved both.
I think I saw it only once, but I think I also I enjoyed the movie. I don't remember much of it, but I remember thinking, oh, this is kind of like Cinderella, but yes, with Anne Hathaway and different.
It is definitely Cinderella, but it is a twist on Cinderella in that they explain the fact that she's indentured to her stepmother because she has no choice. Like she's under a curse that was supposed to be a gift. Like the fairy, I think it's the fairy godmother, gives her the gift of obedience, but it turns out to be a curse more than a gift.
I think I remember that now.
I need to watch that one again. I kind of wanted to do that. I feel like I have so many already that I'm adding into my list, and I already added two more that I was not planning on doing, because when I recorded all the ones for Rodgers and Hammerstein with Lisa, I don't know if you know who she is. She's somebody who used to be on the Hallmarkies with Rachel. She accidentally found another version, like a TV version from the year 2000, that was more of a modern take on Cinderella. Like, okay, this sounds weird. I want to watch it. And she really likes the idea of watching a bunch. So we're going to do that one. Okay. And then she's also like, I don't know if you ever gave me an answer, but I asked about if you wanted to do Cinderfella.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think you asked me then.
She grew up with that version.
Okay.
So she wants to do that one too.
There we go.
So I'm adding a bunch. It's going to take me through the end of the year. And I don't really want to keep on doing Cinderella into next year as well. So I guess I'll save.
I'm looking up Cinderfella, and it says Ed Wynn is the fairy godfather.
Yes. That was one of the main reasons I wanted to do that one, was when I saw that.
Like, I didn't have any interest in Cinderfella, but now that I've seen Ed Wynn is the fairy godfather, I might have to check that out.
Yeah, just that idea is so great.
Ed Wynn and Jerry Lewis, that's a pair.
Yeah.
Are you doing Into the Woods, I guess, because that has Cinderella in it, or no?
Not right now. I probably should eventually, because like it's more than just Cinderella. I feel like it would encompass a whole bunch of different ones if I was ever to do a bunch of different ones. So it's on my list to sometime get to, but I don't know when I'll get to it. It's not a high priority.
Okay.
My highest priority was the Disney ones and the Rodgers and Hammerstein ones, Ever After. And then once you suggested this one, I was like, okay, this is different enough. It's like the others, other than Ever After, it's like, and it's three Disney ones, and then it's three Rodgers and Hammerstein ones. I feel like I need to add a little more diversity and choice here. So
yeah. And The Slip and the Rose was like it was pretty popular when it came out. Like it got nominated for two Oscars, and I think it was like the best film in, or like the film of the year in Britain or something. Like I think every year they pick one, and it was that.
I could see that, because it really was a good production.
Yeah.
Like it felt, it's probably unfair to compare it to the 1965 Cinderella, but like when I watched that, I could not see why this was so popular. It was fine, but I wouldn't choose to watch it again.
No, okay.
This just the one with Brandy is so much better, and the one with Julie Andrews is so much better. It's like it was like a poor imitation of those.
Okay,
but apparently it was huge when it came out. So
yeah,
but they also didn't have anything to compare it to, because the Julie Andrews one was sort of lost. Like it was made during a time when they did not save recordings. And the only recording that was made was a dress rehearsal. So the one we have to watch today is not even the version that was broadcast. It was a dress rehearsal.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
So it's like you can tell it's not that great of quality. Like, it was made during the era of color TV, but it's black and white. It's grainy. It's like it was somebody recording a screen during the dress rehearsal. So it's not that great of quality. But even with that, it's Julie Andrews. It's really good, even though the picture quality of the recording is not that great.
Yeah.
But yeah, they wouldn't have had that to compare.
I've never seen it, but like I've seen like clips of it. So I know what you mean by like the black and white and the bad quality.
It's on YouTube. The whole thing, like they have a channel that they made specifically to get it out there.
Yeah, I just never got around to it. I never saw the Leslie Ann Warren either.
I mean, if you're watching all to compare, then watch it.
Yeah.
But like, if you only want to watch one, the Julie Andrews one or the Brandy one. And it really, all three are very different anyway, so I guess technically it's fine to watch all of them because it is three different experiences, because they each one, even though some of the songs are the same, they all kind of do their own things with them. So it is interesting to watch all three. I didn't feel like I was watching the same movie three times because they were quite different, even though they were the same. Anyway, I think we probably gave our final thoughts a while ago.
Yeah, that's the thing in the rose. Go see it.
Yeah.
I guess the only thing we didn't really talk about is the stepsisters, but there's not really much to talk about them.
Yeah. They were just there. Fine.
Yeah.
I liked the ones from the various Rodgers and Hammerstein versions better than these ones. I kept comparing this step family to the previous ones that I had just watched.
Yeah.
It's like in all three of the Rodgers and Hammerstein ones, I really liked step family. They're terrible, but they're funny.
Funny, yeah. Here they're not entertaining. They're just
terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not in a funny way. It's just the kind of way where it's like, okay, when do they get their comeuppance? Oh, they don't?
And great. They don't, yeah. Okay, great. See ya.
Anyway, I guess that'll be all for this version of Cinderella.
That's all she wrote.
I'm sure you'll be back for more in the future, whether it's Cinderella or something else.
Yep, sure. We have a lot more to talk about that we never even got to yet.
I'm hoping that my first series in 2024 will be The Wind in the Willows. And I know there are some that we've planned for ages to talk about for Wind in the Willows. So
yeah, our list is like years old by now.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
We keep adding things to it.
Yes.
We'll get to everything eventually, hopefully. But anyway, until then, do you want to let people know where they can find you if they want more from you?
Yeah, you could check out my blogs. I have the animation accommodation at theanimationaccommodation.com. I post animated film reviews, top 13 lists, and I host an animated and animation themed Who Wants to Be a Millionaire game show there. And I have my live action Disney project where I'm trying to watch every single theatrically released and now Disney Plus release live action Disney film ever made. I recently passed my 10-year anniversary on that, but there's still more to go. and that's at mylabactiondisneyproject.com.
Okay, well, until next time.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to Every Version Ever. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe and follow my co-hosts as well. My link tree and all of our links will be in the description below. If you want more of my content, all my podcasts are available on YouTube as well as most podcast platforms. If you enjoyed this show, check out one of the other podcasts or check out my Patreon for bonus and extended episodes you won't find anywhere else. We'll be back soon with another brand new episode, so thanks for listening and we'll see you next time.